Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Campbell. I'm a doula in Washoe County, Nevada, a Medicaid provider, a lactation educator, childbirth educator, and mom of 18. You can find me and connect on doulainreno.com. Remember, give a shout out to those who are brave enough to share their stories with us on how they have become parents. Let's dive in. Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm the host, Jennifer Campbell. Today, I'm here with Sarah Armstrong. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
I'm really excited about this. This is a conversation that I'm not sure if I've had this conversation with really anyone. And in 7 years, that says a lot. I'm really excited. I want you to jump in and start sharing your parenting journey.
Yeah. Well, I'm fortunate to be the mother of one child, Grace, who is now actually 21, a junior in college. So she's off and running and flying in the world. I said I raised her for her wings to fly. But I had her when we were living in Atlanta. And actually, when she was seven, we actually ended up getting a divorce. And through that process of getting a divorce, I made a decision. I should stop and say my parents have been married for 55 years.
Oh, wow. Now, wait a minute, but I'm still going to ask the question. They're happily married and love each other.
Happily married and love each other. And honestly, Jennifer, one of those true pictures of partnership.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have two younger brothers. So the three of us were raised by this amazing couple who I adore. And they're 80 years old this past year and celebrated their 55th anniversary. So I say that because I had a certain picture of childhood and family and all those things. And so when we decided to get a divorce and I realized that this was the path we're going to go down. And from a parenting standpoint, what was that going to look like for Grace in terms of, because, you know, I always say no one gets married to get divorced.
Nope.
No one gets divorced for positive reasons. Unfortunately, there's something that triggers that divorce. But children don't get to decide that their parents are going to get divorced, and they're the most significantly impacted. And so I think that it's really important for those couples that go through divorce and that have a child or children involved, that they're putting their children first. And so from a parenting standpoint, and what my ex-husband and I discussed very early on in our divorce process, is that I wanted to make sure that everything we did put Grace front and center. Now, not in terms of what I would say, like being a helicopter parent or, you know, all of those things. It was really more about just making sure her best interests were always being, you know, kept in mind as we were making all these different decisions about her life and how we were going to live our lives. And I should say that I watched very ugly divorce. My parents were married for so long and had a beautiful marriage, but I watched some really ugly divorces growing up. So I had a mental model of this very negative situation. So I wanted to figure out how we would co-parent better together. So we went on the journey of doing that. And I think the one thing I'll say is it takes a lot of effort and kind of conscious decision-making about how you're going to approach this to go down the path to have what I deem and call a good divorce. And the co-parenting is so fundamental to that and how you actually approach it. I say that when a couple goes through divorce and children involved, the stakes are high, you know, they're so high, and we owe it to our children that they're not collateral damage.
Yeah.
Because divorce took place, you know, and they really can be. And, you know, I said, even though a couple doesn't want to be together, we've decided to bring children into the world, you know, and we make a commitment to our children when we bring them into the world to bring them, you know, up in the safest, healthiest, happiest environment possible. You know, that's, as parents, that's our goal, right? And I say that, you know, we cover the plugs, you know, we put bike helmets on them, you know, we feed them organic milk. We do all these things to make sure they're safe, happy, and healthy. But when you go through a divorce, you have the potential to put them in a toxic environment and for them to stay in that toxic environment for a really long time. And so that's where the co-parenting comes in. I think you have to step back and say, what's best for our children? How, and take that co-parenting seriously in terms of having the intent of having a good divorce and making sure your children come out of it on the other end, not being collateral damage.
I read what we were talking about today and instantly all my own shame came barreling forward. My kids, well, I mean, some of them were so young when I got divorced. They have no memory of a time before that. We know when you're 2, 3, 4, 5, the third oldest remembers like one or two things when we were together, really, really small. And we moved cross country and then divorced. We didn't know that was going to happen. So like we had this massive upheaval of a move, which can be pretty traumatic to kids. Then a year later we're divorced, and I now they're all adults. This was 20 years ago almost. But when you look back, when I look back, I think, oh, these are the list of things that we did really well. And this was the list of things that I wish I could go back and tell my younger self, hey, in this year, you need to be focused on this and you need to know about this. I would do like almost anything to be able to go back and leave myself notes for the things that didn't go as well. And then I was in another relationship and that one dissolved, and they were all old enough to see that. And it's so hard because I don't want parents to think you stay in a really negative or abusive, or like that relationship can be really, really toxic and awful, that marriage. That doesn't mean you're not a good dad or a good mom to the right. And so I'm not saying stay because the kids are collateral damage in a divorce, because I would have never stayed either of those times. There's no, look, with all the hindsight and retrospect, nothing would have made me stay in either of those situations in that relationship. However, the collateral damage is strong. And I think I felt like I would do things better than my parents, which was a low bar. But even when you do things better and your goal is to do things right, we're screwing up our kids in a great, like, there's no way around it, right? So continue on. But this one, I think it's a hard conversation because all my shame, guilt, failure comes barreling forward the second we start talking about it.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that. And thank you for sharing. I think the challenge is, first of all, and I said it earlier, you know, you don't grow up thinking about, so when I get divorced, this is how I'm going to do it. Right?
No.
You know, and so when it presents itself to you, and there's so much emotion involved in the decision, in the process, both for yourself and then for your children. And so I think one of the challenges is, how do you step back and think as clear in a clear-minded way, and that's sometimes really hard, of how you want to approach this? And you're never going to get it all right, Jennifer. To your point, yeah. you go back and go, oh, I wish I would have done that differently. But I think it's a matter of where you can think through things and look ahead a bit and think about what you would want life to look like for your children, and understand the different options of how life can look like for your children, and explore what's best for you and your children and your ex-spouse and the family structure that you're now going to be operating in. Those are all things to think through.
Yes.
And, you know, I look back and interestingly enough, you know, Grace coined the term a good divorce for me. And we were standing at a CVS checkout counter a year after our divorce. So she's 8 years old. And there's a People magazine on this newsstand. And there's a celebrity couple getting divorced. And she said to me, Mommy, is that a good divorce or a bad divorce? And I looked at her, I said, Grace, I have no idea. Well, what's the difference between a good divorce and a bad divorce? She goes, well, good divorce is when the mommy and daddy are nice to each other like you and daddy. And a bad divorce is when they scream and yell at each other. Now, by the way, Grace didn't have any friends at this point that had gone through and whose parents had gone through divorce. She had not seen another divorce, but that was her kind of description. And I walked out of the CVS that day. Oh, I did say to her, I said, you know, Grace, it's hard to tell from a magazine cover what type of divorce that is. But as I walked out of that CVS that day, Jennifer, I thought, you know what, whatever my ex-husband and I were doing, the fact that a year after we had literally blown up her life in so many ways, she's living across two homes and all the logistics of life of that. And she was the first of her friends. She didn't know anyone else going through this. The fact that she could say we had a good divorce, I knew we were onto something. You know, I knew that we were approaching a way that she could phrase it in that way. And so we kept going. So
I want to go back to when you two decide, obviously you've written a book about this. So I shameless self-promotion here. There's a book and the link is in the show notes. I love it. You've written a book. You talk about this, you're podcasting about this. So at some point you and your ex-husband had to have this conversation about, hey, I'm going to be broadcasting how to have a good divorce. And it included you. And I want to talk about from the point you got you decided to get a divorce, the decisions that you made then, and then that comment a year later, I'm sure was pivotal because, I mean, if it had been me, I would have been like, okay, what are we doing that she thinks is good?
Yes.
What does good divorce mean? What have we done well? How can we continue to improve this? Like, that would have been a Pandora's box conversation. Like, not for her. For her, it was just a comment in passing. But for you, it must have been like, wait. So absolutely. Can you take me through the divorce process and what you decided and all of that?
Absolutely. So, excuse me. So first of all, we went through, it's called a collaborative divorce, which is where you have two coaches that kind of coach you through the decisions you need to make as parents for your children. And you're doing that to put together a parenting plan, which is the plan about how you're going to approach raising your children across two households. So it's a fundamental kind of structure document that you're working on together. Then the lawyers come in to write up whatever you've agreed to, and that's the legal process. But two of the other interesting parts of this process is there's a child specialist that helps you keep in view what you're doing about your child, and then a financial neutral person that looks at your finances. That the moment for me, Jennifer, that was so poignant in our early stages of deciding to go through this divorce process is we sat down with the child specialist to talk about that we were going to tell Grace we were going through divorce. And he looks at me and he says, do you travel? And I said, yeah, I travel internationally for my job. And he looks at my ex-husband, he says, do you travel? And he says, yeah, I travel domestically. And he said, well, Grace is about to become a professional traveler. She's going to travel every week for the next 11 years back and forth between your homes. And she's going to have to pack a bag. And Jennifer, I burst into tears. I burst into tears. And I said, that is not what I want for Grace's life. That is not, she doesn't deserve this. She didn't ask for this. So I walked out of that session that day and I looked at my ex-husband. I said, I don't know what it looks like yet. I don't know, but I want us to think about how we minimize Grace feeling like she's a professional traveler and that she has to pack a bag every week. So what I'm going to now say does have some socioeconomic considerations, and I appreciate that. But what we tried to do was to set up Grace's life where she had the basics of both homes.
Yes.
So socks, underwear, you know. Now there are special items, which I'll talk about in a moment, which you're not going to two of, and those have to go back and forth. But the goal was that when Grace walked out the door to go to school every morning, she just had her backpack with her school books in them. She didn't have to carry an extra bag just because she was going to mom or dad's house after school.
That because is then, massive.
You know, yeah, because then she's the kid in the carpool line in first grade who has an extra bag. And everyone's, you know, it's like the signal, you know, you're different. Your parents are divorced, all these things. So I didn't want that for her. Now, I do say in a little bit of a lighthearted way, somehow all the socks got to one of the houses. And there were no I don't know how it happened. I'm not sure how these things happen. So we had to go through what I called rebalancing days, where I text my ex-husband, he texts me and say, hey, I'm out of the socks. So then the key here is it wasn't for Grace to go up into her dresser and her closet and figure out all the things that had shifted to one house. So there's, again, she's 7, 8, 9, 10. It's our job. We decided to have her live across two homes. So then one of us would go up, figure out what was out of balance, put it in a bag. And then as we were transitioning, we would hand the bag to the other parent. And the other parent would go and put those things back. Because again, Grace shouldn't have to repack her things into her second bedroom, whichever way she's going. So the thing that allowed us to do is try to keep things, as, and I say in air quotes, as normal as possible for Grace. Yes, she was living across two homes. But these things that are the daily reminders that you're living in a divorce situation, how do you minimize those for your kids? How do you let them just be the kids that they want to be at this age? And if they do have to go back and forth between two homes, which inevitably they do if that's the setup, then how do you minimize it so it isn't them carrying that extra bag, them repacking their clothes, them, you know, all these things that we might not think about because we're so, quite honestly, absorbed in our own life of trying to do things, but they're living across two homes. you know, you're not as a parent generally, unless you do a nesting situation, but you're, you know, you're getting to sleep in the same bed every night.
This is like one of the most vital things. We did not get this advice. And I remember trying to do this and there was some contention in the situation, and a decade in, maybe 8 years in, it came up in court, and I brought it up in court, and the judge was furious that the kids ever needed, like you said, special things, which I know we'll talk about that. But like, I'm talking about normal stuff. The kids shouldn't have to pack a bag at my house. I shouldn't be ferrying it every single time they go back. Well, I mean, I think what you guys did was great. Rebalancing. That's great. But I'm talking every time they go. And I was so exhausted with it and with what I was hearing feedback and from the kids, that this very specific thing came up in court, but they didn't talk about it. It didn't come up preventatively.
Yes.
It came up when it was a hassle and the kids were bouncing and my kids hated having to move.
Yes.
Every week, right? Yeah. All the time. Yeah, all the and time. So the judge was like, this shouldn't even be a conversation. You should have both houses set up with everything that the kids need.
Yeah.
This should, and I was like, thank you. But we went through 8 to 10 years of arguing about it, not with the kids, but like.
It's just contention, right?
Why aren't you getting all these things in the house so that the kids have them at both places? You know, it's huge. It's huge.
Yeah. It's huge. Yeah. And I think that it's just, again, these are just some foundational things, Jennifer, that if they can be put in place, then, you know, there are going to be these moments, and we'll go to special items for a moment. There was a day that Grace came down the stairs. She was, Mom, my dress up shoes are at Dad's place. Now we're racing. I know I always had like barely a 5 minute window to stay on time with things in the morning.
Yes.
But get back to the door and get to work and get her to school. And you know, at that moment, I had to take a deep breath and think. And I looked at her, I said, well, let's go get him at Dad's, because the reality is it's not her fault that her dress up shoes at her dad's place. It's literally, right. It's not her fault.
And that never bothered me.
Right.
Those like special items. I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, what?
Yeah.
Like, oh, but the kid didn't know that.
Exactly.
This is just one of those things. It's a side effect of this decision.
It is. But the thing is, some parents might say to their child, well, why didn't you remember it was dress up day at school? Why didn't you remember that your shoes? Like, you can make your child feel badly about this situation. And the goal is that, again, they didn't choose this. It is their reality, but they did not choose it. And so in those moments, taking that deep breath, and to your point, you can have a conversation with yourself in your head about how frustrating that moment might be, but not having your child know that that's a frustrating moment, because it's not their fault. It really isn't.
Yeah.
So that's an example. The other thing I'd say that was a conscious aspect of less on the co-parenting side, but more on your child's environment. I think when your children go through a divorce with you, their physical environment can be so greatly impacted. Meaning, if you decide to stay in the home with the children and your ex-spouse moves out, or if you decide to move to two homes, whatever the case is. For our situation, I was staying in the home with Grace, and my ex-husband was moving to another place. And so we were divvying up all of our household items. Like, it was going to be split, things were going. And what I talk about in my book is minimizing the gaps. And what I mean by that is, you know, if a chair is going to be taken out, rearrange the room so there's just not this gaping hole where that chair used to be. Or if a piece of artwork comes off the wall, you might not be able to afford to put another piece of artwork up, but maybe a mirror, or rearrange it in a bit, just so that it's not just the gaping hole over the fireplace. And one of the things that we had is we had a long hallway of family black and white photos that were interspersed in my ex-husband and mine. And it was this beautiful montage of our life and our family's lives. But I needed to give my ex-husband his photos. And so I took the time, and I say that because it was almost like its own project. And I got other photos, other black and white photos put together in frames purchased. And one day I sent Grace down the street to a play date. And I brought out a box and I took his photos off the wall and I put new photos up and I put it all away. And about an hour later, Grace comes home and I'm in the kitchen and I hear this little voice from the hallway say, hey, Mommy. And I go, what's that, Grace? She goes, the wall has changed. And I stop in my tracks and I go, well, what's changed? She said, there are more pictures of me up there. It looks great. And she went up to her. And Jennifer, I took a deep breath. That's like, oh, okay. So the thing is, if I hadn't taken the time to get those other photos done and put them in frames and put those up, and all I had done is taken my ex-husband's photos and family photos off the wall and put them in a box and given them to him and left those little hangers interspersed throughout that hallway, what Grace would be telling a therapist years later is my parents got a divorce and my mom took all the photos of my dad off the wall and left those little hangers.
It's so, I don't know how to say this nicely because it's about us. It's about me. It's so hard to think so consciously about every little thing. I think looking back on my situation, we ended up moving. So when we moved here, we weren't really in the same house. My ex-husband went to prison. And so we had a year from when we moved to when he went. But he was back and forth to where our old house was across the country. So he wasn't in that house very much, but all of our stuff was. The inadvertent thing that happened was when he got out of prison, I moved the same weekend to a different house. So we split the stuff. The kids weren't there. He took a U-Haul with the stuff he wanted, and I took the U-Haul with the stuff that and I moved into a new house, and holy crap, I'm so glad because this situation that you're talking about, you have to be so consciously intentional. And I'm not saying that we can't, it's just that you're really stepping back to think about this from every lens, and you could inadvertently really mess it up or make it harder without that being your intention.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, the way I approached actually writing this book that I ended up putting, The Mom's Guide to a Good Divorce, that the whole intention of it was breaking everything down into the bite-sized pieces of guidance that you need to think through, but in a way that's consumable for a mom who's going through divorce, because so much is coming at you. And to your point, it's an emotional time. What else? So you're exhausted. You're mentally exhausted. You're emotionally exhausted. You're physically tired. And it's just, it is one of the most challenging times in life. And so, and I was, by the way, I was given books during my divorce, and they were so thick and dense, and I opened them and closed them. I never read a book, never once. I also was the first of my friends to go through divorce, so I didn't have anyone to kind of say, hey, this. I was the first. So when I wrote this book and outlined the guidance, it was with what I call bite-sized pieces, you know, little bite-sized pieces of guidance. And it's a lot to take in if you were to see my book. There's 185 topics, but they're broken into preparing for the change, during the change, and post the change. It's not meant to be read cover to cover. It's the content puts all of those 185 topics out, and you can look at one topic and think, okay, let me just take that one in. Let me think about that. Let me, to your point, maybe think intentionally about, do I want to do it that way, or is there something I want to think about against that specific topic? So, because I agree with you, you can't see around every curve and every corner in a divorce situation. And you can't also beat yourself up when you don't know, because again, we didn't plan to do this. You know, our lives are not set up for us planning for divorce. It happens to us, but when it happens, you have to figure out how to put your wheels in motion in a positive direction, because the reason you're going through divorce, and I say this often, the reason you're going through divorce is to be happy and have a positive environment in the future. That's the goal, right? That's the reason you've made this decision. And one of the challenges is, depending on how you approach it, you can be pulled back into the negativity of what brought you to that decision if you're not careful. And so how do all of these literally micro moments, bite-sized pieces of guidance, these things can help us to pave that more positive path forward for yourself and for your children?
I agree. Well, that's great that it's bite-sized, because like, you can't eat an elephant in one bite. You just can't. And I think we get overwhelmed. I love that you said that you get sucked back into the negativity of why you made this decision, because I think that that can be so easy. And as the woman going, or the man, as the parent going through the divorce, the reason why and all those, you're still working through all of that. I mean, for me, it was like the lowest point in my adult life.
Absolutely. Me too. No question.
No question. For about 2 years. But I didn't want my kids. I didn't want my feelings to bleed into my kids. I didn't want them to know how hard it was. And So that's a really hard balance. Also, side note, one of my daughters that only has a couple memories of when we were married, one of her memories is when she got in trouble. So I'm like, of all the things that you remember, it's getting in trouble for not changing out of a white dress because she was going to drink grape juice. And I said, you need to get that white dress off because if you spill, I can't get it out. It'll ruin your dress. She ignored me, drank juice, spilled it down her dress, and got in trouble. That was pre-divorce. And I'm like, so you can screw them up from like weird grape juice. Like,
Honestly, the things you can remember, you're like, oh, that was an interesting memory to have.
yeah, I'm like, what? Like, you don't remember all the books I read to you or the, like, you couldn't have pulled a different memory. So, like, that was a pre-divorce memory of her dad and I together when I was really mad at her because she didn't listen to me and we threw the dress away and she'd worn it once and her grandma bought it. So, your kids are going to grasp on to, like, when they all sit around and talk, I'm like, first, was I ever here? Was I ever involved? I don't know how you guys did all these things behind my, I, was I an absent parent? So we have like these great conversations now that they're adults. Oh, remember when Brianna backed the van into the car, into the house, and she turned around and said, don't tell mom. And no one told me until she did around a big, like, all these, I'm like, was I
Listen.
ever even there? One. And like, why isn't that the memory that you had to, like, that was the pivotal mom memory of you being four? Was spilling grape juice and me getting mad. I mean, so regardless of how hard you try on a positive side, they're going to pick and choose memories that you're like, what?
Absolutely. Yeah. No. And some make
Why?
sense. Yeah. And you don't know why some stick out and some don't, right?
And that's when you're trying and you're doing a good job and you're parenting well and you have good boundaries and you're not at the lowest low. And
Yeah, absolutely. And that's
so
the
we
thing.
have to be kind.
We have to be kind. And that's, I would say a couple of things to that point is, first of all, getting divorced is an action. Get divorced. But I think that for you and your children, the ability to go through divorce and know that there's going to be a positive, healthy, happy future is why you do it. And one of the things you said earlier really strikes me is I think a lot of times we are going through it and there's so much going on that I talk about building a compartmentalization muscle, because the emotions that you're experiencing, you need to experience it. I'm not saying the compartmentalization muscle means to put all of your feelings inside and never let them out. I'm just saying that when your buttons are pushed or when there's a moment when you're going to experience high emotion, just be conscious if your children are in view and whether they can take in that emotion that you're expressing in a way that's healthy for them. Because a lot of times what we need to express and what they need to see and hear are two different things. And so I do Pilates. So I joke that you need a strong core muscle and Pilates. Well, I think we all need a strong compartmentalization muscle. And set it in those moments, decide, am I going to let show this emotion? If you're going to, just be conscious that your children are going to take that in and how they process it. And to your point, what they're going to remember may be its own story. But if you say, set this aside, I'm going to go talk to my therapist, I'm going to go talk to my best friend, I'm going to talk to my sister, my mother, whoever it is, or I'm going to go talk for a long walk by myself and talk to myself, whatever it is, just thinking about how you process those emotions in the moment and what you allow your children to see is really important. Your point about memories and what they remember, a lot of times in these divorce situations, when it is a toxic environment, those are the memories that they're going to have, is those toxic moments. And they're not going to remember the positive of whether, like, pre-divorce, during divorce, or post, like they're just gonna, those toxic ones stick. They really do.
Unfortunately.
Right. And so that's where I think it's again, not the things I'm saying, Jennifer, are not easy. And I want to recognize that there's nothing easy about this topic. There's nothing easy about the actions I'm proposing in my book, because everything takes effort. To your point, it takes really conscious effort to do these things. But I fundamentally believe if you put the conscious effort in on behalf of your children and keep them front and center as you're making these decisions, you have the best potential opportunity for them to come out of it not as collateral damaged, as unscathed as possible. I mean, there are going to be scars along the way, but how do you have them at the end of it say, yeah, my parents were divorced, but gosh, I had the best childhood. I could have given the divorce situation.
I want to talk about two things. One is, for me, like, your kids are going to experience other things. One thing, we have the retrospect, the hindsight of having adult kids, and like, kids go through bullying. They're all like being pushed, you know, having drugs, alcohol, sex, all of those things. They're going through their normal life too, which can be hard on its own. Absolutely. And I always wanted to recognize that you can't make them talk to you about it. Like, there are some situations my kids didn't tell me till later, and because they felt so bad, like they didn't want to make life hard for me. Right. But they're going through their own growing up, which includes some of their own traumas that have nothing to do with you as parents that you have to be mindful of. And also, like, I poured it. That's when I really started running more. And, I would bring my kids on their bikes and they would take me on their bus route. And it was really fun. But I remember one moment when my daughter said, "Mommy, I think you need to go for a run." And I wasn't being a terrible parent. I wasn't yelling. I wasn't being snappy. But one thing that I inadvertently taught my kids is that you should put yourself first sometimes, because then you can show up in the best way. And my kids knew that when I did that walk, talking to myself, or when I went for my run, even if they were all with me on their bikes, I was the best version of myself. And so there are so many ways that you can take this and put it positively. And running helped me work through a lot of stuff that had been going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do believe running, walking, some type of
something,
combination of physical activity with process, I think mental processing, which mm-hmm. is a lot of mental processing and emotional processing that goes on during this process. And so whatever that outlet is, it could be meditation. It could be massage, like whatever you can do.
A personal trainer at the gym. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. Right.
Right. Therapy. I mean, it's like pick whatever it is that you need to help process. And what you said is really important, so that you can show up as the best version of yourself, you know, during this process. And, you know, I always just said to Grace along her childhood, I'd say, you know what, Mom's doing the best I can.
I've said that many times.
Right. And, you know, some days it was good. And some days I'm like, you know, I'm hanging by a thread here, but we're doing the best I can, you know, because you're piecing together a life. You're a single working parent. You're trying to things. And it's like, you know, I might be a couple minutes late, or I might forget to have signed the, you know, permission slip, or whatever it is that I, you know, you're trying to do all these things. So I think that's always just also reminding your kids that you are doing all you can, the best you can to raise them in this, you know, positive and crazy world that we have.
I want to end on a happy, well, I mean, I think this has been a tough but positive conversation. So we don't need to end on a happy note, like we're all mm-hmm. sad. Mm-hmm. But I want you, your website is all about the book, and you do a lot of speaking. Can you talk to me about what you do, how people can reach out to you, how you support other people going through this, all of those things?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first, when I wrote this book, and I mentioned this to you earlier, you know, I wrote it to just help women and moms, and in fairness, parents in general. I've had men that have read the book as well, but mm-hmm. it is meant to help you and be that guide. You know, that, and I actually, I'll tell you a quick story. I was in the produce section of the grocery store right after I'd written this book, and this woman came up to me with, I was standing with my cart, and she says, "Are you Sarah Armstrong, the author?" And I stopped and I said, "Oh yeah, actually I am." Because I actually live in the corporate world, and this is something I'm doing to give back. And she said, "Well, I was at your book signing at Barnes & Noble, and I'm going through a divorce." And I always say, "I'm so sorry. I'm sorry about the divorce." And she goes, "Well, mm-hmm. I just know. I carry your book with me everywhere, and it keeps me calm."
Oh.
And she said, "Thank you for writing this book." And so I said, "Well, thank you for sharing that with me." And so as she walked away, Jennifer, I thought, you know what? That's why I've written this book. Is to help a woman that I don't know, going through the toughest phases of life. Mm-hmm. If this book can help keep her calm as she's going through it, like that's like that moment was just fueled the belief I have in helping people in this space. So what I do. So the website is www.gooddivorce.guide. The book is The Mom's Guide to a Good Divorce. It is available on Amazon in paperback. On an iBook, Kindle version. And also yep. I went to the studio and did an Audible version. So I do believe that some women might not want to have this on their bedside for various reasons, but you can take it in the format that helps you. As I mentioned earlier, it's 185 topics. It's not meant to be read cover to cover, but it is meant to be there as that guide as you're going through preparing for, during, and post the change. And I do podcasts, as you mentioned. I'm invited on podcasts around the world. And I decided to do this, to spend time doing the podcast, because I just don't think there's enough conversation in our society about the topic about how to have a good divorce. You know, and that keeping children front and center is, and I want to change societal perception that a good divorce is an attainable outcome. I fundamentally believe that, but it takes one divorce at a time. It takes having a positive mindset about how you want to approach the process. Obviously, divorce itself is a negative thing in terms of the reason, but if you can shift your mindset to what you're going to do to be able to go down the path with you and your children to get to a positive place, that's the goal. That's why you do it, right? To be happy, to have your children in a more happier environment, all of those things. So the reason I spend the time I do with you and others is really just to share about that message. And I should say one thing. I just started at the beginning. I'm not an advocate for divorce. Yeah. Actually, people should stay happily married. I mean, that's my parents are the beautiful example. But if that's not going to work out, then think about how you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Think about how you're going to do it. And then it sounds funny. I become the poster child for a good divorce. And I had someone recently say to me, "Well, you make divorce look too good." And I said, "You know what? All I'm trying to do is be happy."
Yeah.
And I want Grace's life to be happy, and I want us to live in a positive environment. So if that means I'm making divorce look quote unquote too good, okay, that's what I'm doing.
Sarah, thank you so much for being on and broaching this conversation. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you for having me, and I really appreciate the conversation, and hopefully your listeners can reflect on it if they're in the situation, and hopefully it's helpful.